and welcome to Pop A La Carte, podcast number 3. This week we're talking about Han Solo, Broadchurch, Game of Thrones, and maybe Spider-Man Homecoming if we have time.
Hopefully. Sweet.
So I'm Valerie.
I'm Tatiana.
And I'm Brian.
And we'll start with Han Solo. So some shit went down.
Oh, God.
Yeah, quite a bit. I mean, none of it is heartening news either. I mean,
it's honestly probably of everything they've announced or all the rumored movies, the movie I have the least interest in, and now you just made it worse.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, the director, or you should know, I'm sure you do know, but the directors were just fired.
Yeah, so Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who were announced as directors, like, I think pretty soon after they even announced the movie, like, they were attached from the get-go. And they've been filming since January, and reportedly there was only 3 weeks of shooting left.
Yeah, they're almost done with the...
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Which is, yeah, and like you said, like, there are a lot of Star Wars fans who are not completely on board with this movie, you know? Like a lot of, like, myself included, I consider Han Solo probably my favorite Star Wars, or one of my favorite Star Wars characters. I don't want to see his backstory, and that's also, like...
Backstories often ruin it.
Yeah, well, not to mention, like, I'm also a big fan of Anne Crispin's Han Solo trilogy, which I would love, if they were to do a direct adaptation of that, I would be much more on board. For one thing, like, when they announced Woody Harrelson as a Han Solo's mentor, I remember thinking, like, he's a perfect version of Garrus Shrike from this book, but I know they're not going to do this book.
It's like expanded, you know, like, expanded universe. Yeah. Like, it's been going on for so many years that even though they're sort of like wiping the slate clean, it's almost too late to replace it with.
Yeah, and at the same time, totally I realized that they could do something kind of analogous. I mean, a lot of people pointed out, like, Kylo Ren is very clearly similar to Jason Solo. Mm-hmm. You know, he was the Solo child who became a Jedi Knight in Luke's Academy, then turned to the dark side and killed everybody. You know, like, so they could do something similar.
Point?
I mean, there is my point being, like, in the old canon, there is a backstory for Han Solo that could really work, I think. Mm-hmm. But we have to assume Disney's going to do something in a different direction, and not to mention, like what was it? I remember somebody pointing out, like, we already have 3 great young Han Solo movies, and they're called the Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah, that's true. Seriously. No, right, because that's his journey to being a hero.
Yeah.
He wasn't one before. He
exactly.
wasn't at the start of
New
Hope. So how are
so
you going to show
him, really
like...
really want to watch him be...
Yeah.
Exactly. When we meet him in a New Hope, we're supposed to not... like, well, yeah, we're supposed to be like find him appealing because he's sort of this dashing kind of like this pirate type of character when we meet him. But, you know, he kills Greedo because he's in his way. Like, he's a murderer. He's somebody you shouldn't really like, and that's the point of his arc in those films. Mm-hmm. Is he grows into somebody who's kind of selfless, that who can fight for a greater cause, and telling the backstory of how, like, I don't know, it just seems like, and I'm sure plenty of Star Wars fans agree, like, it's knowing that there was so much potential with these spin-off movies to tell all sorts of Star Wars stories with characters we've never met before, to know that the second one is going to be a young Han movie turned a lot of people kind of the wrong way, I think. And at least for me, like, I know the thing that kept me excited was that Lawrence Kasdan is writing it and Phil Lord and Chris Miller are directing, like, especially after the Lego movie.
Mm-hmm. Which is so great.
Yeah.
Like, you definitely know that they have, like, a fun, light touch that they would be able to bring to it.
Yeah.
But apparently that was not what was wanted.
Yeah, it was too much levity, the wrong kind of humor, I guess, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, and I guess, like, because I know there's a lot of people who I think, after this news came out, like, pointed fingers at Kathy Kennedy, because, you know, Phil Lord and Chris Miller are up-and-coming beloved directors that a lot of people, even if they're not on board with Han Solo, they're like, I want to see their take on a Star Wars movie, you know, and losing them... 3 weeks before,
exactly.
Before,
like,
it's over.
How does it take you that long to realize that it's not the tone that you want?
You should have known, a weekend.
Yeah,
exactly.
That this isn't working.
Who was just like sleeping on their job?
Right. there was a lot of talk on, like, as I think Variety's report on their firing. They you know, and Variety has a lot of reputable sources, I'm sure, but like they were saying that. It seemed like it wasn't just Kathy Kennedy who had issues with the way they were directing. It was like Lawrence Kasdan, you know, and that makes sense considering, like, Kasdan. I feel like
it's his script.
He wrote Empire Strikes Back. That's probably more Lee Brackett's. I don't know exactly who had
but
more.
He has like a stake in the whole backstory.
Yeah. Obviously, like, Han Solo is very close to his heart, and it doesn't surprise me the report that was saying that he didn't like Phil Lord and Chris Miller, that he potentially didn't like their kind of like improv-y kind of comic-y kind of they really wanted to play up the comic relief of Han Solo, which I think he disagreed with. So at least, you know, at least that's
which
kind of the
is, that's interesting. Really so. Kind of the best part
yeah.
of him.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm surprised by that.
I can
yeah.
see them being worried about it being the wrong kind of humor for him, but mm-hmm. humor is like what you expect from him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I
he makes jokes also, instead of being like that's how he is sincere and like right. you know he's not touchy feely. Really.
Yeah. Right. yeah, I guess it's like if it's not like a sardonic enough humor, but then I think Batman from Lego, you know, just make him not animated and then you have like Han Solo's humor, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But still, I mean, I can see like there was talk about how they were going off script and trying to do a lot more improv-y style, and right. I can
and
see why the scriptwriter would have an
exactly.
issue with that. Yeah.
He's probably a writer that likes his words.
Exactly. Like,
well, I can't remember whatever. Where I heard it, but I heard that Emilia Clarke and the actor who's playing
Alden Ehrenreich.
Yes, yeah. we're not necessarily giving the best performances.
Listen,
and that's
right.
part of the problem.
Listen, I love Emilia Clarke.
Yeah,
she's very dear to me.
Yes,
but when I heard that she was cast, I was like, I'm so much less interested now.
Yeah,
because I think that there are certain roles that she can do very well.
Yeah,
and those roles are called Daenerys Targaryen.
Yeah,
and then there
and then
are
Sarah
other
Connor.
Roles. Yeah, yeah. exactly. She's and been, that's what I feel is yeah. going to happen here.
Yeah.
It was really problematic, but that movie with Sam Claflin that she did.
Oh God, Me Before You.
She was cute in that.
Okay.
She was.
Right.
She was good
you.
In that character.
I believe yeah. you, but that movie.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. Like, you know, even a great actor with a bad director can be like Natalie Portman in Attack of the Clones, for
Natalie
example.
Portman.
Academy Award winning actress. And deservedly so, but
right.
terrible in Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
And you can't really. Yeah, and
yeah.
probably just.
So
George
I guess
Lucas,
like, there could have been
like,
a clash just in general. And, you
yeah.
know, like, they're not getting the best performance out of the lead.
But they still should have seen it earlier.
Yeah, of course. That's the big
it's
issue.
It's very worrying
that's
that, like, because all the talk seems to be there, you know, like, because even a lot of people were saying Alden Ehrenreich might have been kind of the catalyst behind, like, kind of talking to Kathy Kennedy and saying, I don't like how they're shooting off script and stuff like that, you know.
Huh.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, like, that's a thing. We're hearing all these sources.
Yeah.
Kinda, mm-hmm. yeah, and we don't know
rumors
who to completely trust. Maybe they're all kind of right, too. Maybe there's a lot that Phil Lord and Chris Miller brought to it that we would have wanted to see, but if they're butting heads this much with the actor, the writer,
mm-hmm.
the producer,
yeah.
maybe that wasn't a good fit for them. But it's still worrying that this decision came this late.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to basically just be like reshoots of the whole movie, or are they going to try to work with what they have and keep going?
Probably. I mean, I could imagine a significant reshoots.
Mm-hmm.
Like Rogue One went through significant reshoots with it. And it wasn't Gareth Edwards behind a lot of the reshoots. It was Tony Gilroy that like Kathy Kennedy brought in, you know,
oh.
and, which is why a lot of people are kind of saying, like, maybe Kathy Kennedy
needs to stop working that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's...
She's kind of stuck in the past.
There's a lot of people kind of pointing fingers at her saying, like, you know, she's cultivated Lucasfilm to be this place for... Or rather, she wants to make it seem like a place for auteur directors and up-and-coming filmmakers who aren't as big of names to bring a unique take to these different one-off films and stuff like that. But a lot of people are saying, like, maybe she's just not... as willing to give as much creative control as
she thinks
as
right.
she should be.
Right.
But
I mean, that's what it seems like. It's like sort of a give and take, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you can do what you want, but then I'm going to tell you I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's easy to see that, like, when we look at the way that The Force Awakens went through, you know, rewrite and Rogue One through reshoots and Han Solo through a director change right before it's done filming. That all being said, like, I'm really surprised with Episode 8 that from the beginning and till today, like, Rian Johnson is still the only credited writer and director, and it seems like he's been being given a lot more creative control.
Maybe it's so. Based on the strength of Force Awakens, like, in terms of, like, how well it did, that they're,
mm-hmm.
like, sort of, I don't know, think that they can let it do
I
what
don't know.
It needs
I
to.
Mean, I have to admit that I'm kind of worried about Episode 8 just
mm-hmm.
because of how open Mark Hamill has been about how unhappy he is with the direction they're going with Luke.
Right.
Although he tried to backpedal a little bit recently, and it's
yeah.
like, no, if you aren't happy, I want to know this because
yeah.
I'm a little worried.
Although
I love
think,
Luke.
I think a lot of what he said has been particularly about The Force Awakens, though.
Yeah.
The decisions that were made there. Like, he's been very
what?
Open about, like, how he would have liked to see a last scene with Luke and Han together, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. But... I don't know. I haven't heard anything specifically about him with 8 as much, but...
I think he said specifically he's not happy with what Rian Johnson has given him.
Okay. And, that's, I mean...
I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that was...
I hadn't heard anything, but
okay.
I'm not plugged into the Star Wars peeps.
I guess, like, personally, I feel like... I like Rian Johnson a lot, but I did think, like... Personally, I felt Looper was really overrated.
Looper was...
But...
It looked like it was going to be great, and then it was really not.
Yeah, I mean, I like Clipper, but not. It's not like a classic to me, or like something that I would.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people regard it as such, and it's like, I don't know.
I think there was a lot of expectations, and it didn't really live up to them.
But I mean, I loved Brick. I loved his two episodes of Breaking Bad, even though he didn't write them. Like, I think he has a signature flair that worked really well for for his episodes. And so, I mean, I think he's a very talented guy. I just personally would probably feel a little more comfortable if episode 8 had brought on another writer or something rather than just having him on board. But I don't know.
Well, especially because they have admitted that they don't really have a plan of where they're going so much.
Yeah.
That it's kind of aimless and it's just basically... That doesn't give me a lot of confidence in the entire franchise because it's like, why do I want to go see a movie? I am still traumatized from Lost, man. I don't know if I want to go see a movie where I'm like, you don't have an idea at least a little ways in advance.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think there have been great storytelling that, like, I think most film series are kind of like this. They don't, like, it's very rare and few and far between when you see, like, an Endgame that's that clear cut, you know?
Yeah. And half the time when they tell you they have a plan, they're lying to you.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
At least they're being
upfront. Yeah, exactly. They did not have a plan.
Because I know, for example, a lot of times people, like, they bring up Breaking Bad as a counter-argument to the Lost. You know, like, this is what works when you have a plan. But even Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould are very open about, we knew Walt was going to die,
if you don't know that by now,
sorry.
I didn't know that, but that's
spoiler.
Okay. I kind of guessed.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's dying the whole show, so.
Yeah. He does not.
Sorry if that was spoiling anyone for Breaking Bad, but you should catch up by
spoilers.
Now. Anyway.
There's always spoilers.
In any case, like, that's all that, like, that's, even knowing that going into the end, there's so much more about the way that the story ended that they didn't know from the beginning, you know, so.
Well,
you know,
I mean,
that's the nature.
You don't
of
have to know everything. Things evolve as stuff happens. Yeah. You know, you have to be able to adapt, but to kind of have a general idea,
like the character trajectory, at least
when there's so much mythology involved, especially you kind of need to know where you're going. And, you know, if the Cylons are, you keep telling me the Cylons have a plan. They better fucking have a plan.
Exactly.
Don't come out to me years later and tell me they never had a plan. Never had a plan.
I've been an X-Files fan since day one, and I really wish Chris Carter had more of a plan before, with some of his storylines and, like, so. Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah. There's a give and take because, especially, at least with television, you never know season by season if you're going to be renewed. And
we've talked about how a lot of the time British television or foreign television in general is better because they can say this is how long our story is and we're done.
That's the big problem is for me when you're just like lengthening a story. Like you have a lot of writers have a plan for a season or have a plan for three seasons and then they go on for more than that. And then it's like, well, suddenly I'm just milking it.
Yeah.
And I've wasted my plan,
right.
Or my plan no longer fits because my actor is leaving, or, you know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, for example, like, episode 9, whatever, like, even if they had something, exactly written out, obviously
they'd
have to change a lot.
I'm so worried about that.
I don't know how I'm going to watch.
Because I don't accept Leia dying, but I also, like...
I don't want her to CGI her.
Yeah, right. I don't want her to CGI her.
Yeah, or rather, if they do, I want it to be extremely minimal. Just
right,
like show her
Force
at a
Awakens,
lineup at the end. Yeah.
No, not Force Awakens, New Hope.
Maybe even less than that, because she had a moment where like she spoke a line and everything, and there's been a lot of contention over whether or not that should have been done. And but at the same time, I have no problem with them showing, like, rather than just having Leia die off screen or something.
Yeah.
I think it'd be I think if something like if you see like the resistance like the resistance base and just have her standing with them or something like that.
Yeah,
that shows
you could
that
just like
there.
Say like this is what she's doing off screen and then show like in the victory or the whatever, just show her there. That would be yes, please do that.
Although obviously at this point they've been very open about how like she was meant to be of a significant part of that. So I think we can all probably safely assume she was probably going to be very instrumental in either the redemptive arc or ending arc for Kylo Ren, you know, so
yeah,
it's her son. So.
It's a horrible, horrible thing to think, but you got to think they kind of wish they hadn't killed Han.
Could
really use
him.
Oh
my god, y'all! Yeah. I had like okay, it's horrible. I was just like imagining like the you know how they do the little the holograms of the people like after they're dead. Like if they did one of like Han and Leia together, and I was like, I'm gonna die. Anyway,
I just really hope in episode 8 at least we see Luke and Leia together.
Yes,
they're better.
We're better.
Yeah. I hope they filmed a scene with them together, because otherwise it's going to really suck if I'm sure never see Luke with either of them.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like, for whatever story purpose that they had intended for Leia in 9, some of that could be delegated to Luke as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
he's
family, you know, so, you know, at least to the character of Kylo Ren, so...
And if Rey turns out to be family, I really hope
exactly.
not.
Oh.
I hope not.
The only reason, if there's any specific reason I don't want Rey to be Luke's daughter, is I don't want episode 8 to have a I am your father scene. Like, for all the crap that The Force Awakens deservedly so got, like, and I say this, I love The Force Awakens, but I think it was way too heavily borrowing off of A New Hope. I don't want to see, you know, 8
beats. Right.
Let's borrow all the story
beats from Empire.
I also I don't like, and it's always just like, you know, like the father is like super significant and in the story, and the mother is like mysterious, rando character that nobody cares about who is just not here.
Yeah.
So.
And plus, why does it have to be like, it doesn't make the character any more significant by, well, I mean, I guess.
It makes it like, she's like, oh, she's part of the mythology, and also.
Yeah.
Everyone important in this entire galaxy
has to be a Skywalker.
Was a Skywalker. Right.
But also, if it's like, not, I guess the one thing is, if it's not Luke's daughter, then there's no more Skywalkers after this. Because Kylo's gonna die. He's not gonna have babies. And...
I don't know. I could see them do like a redemptive arc for him.
Yeah.
But...
I don't want him to have a nice life after that. Right. He can redeem himself and die.
That's true.
If you think about it, the prequels, as much as they weren't filmed, obviously, and the story wasn't written before the original trilogy, we get a redemptive arc for Anakin, who killed a bunch of babies.
That's
like,
true. Yeah, but he gets redeemed and dies.
That's
That's immediately.
Yeah.
It's okay. His redemption is his death.
Yeah, which is a major point. Like, even if he got Luke's forgiveness, he can't get everyone else's. Like, that's actually one thing I really liked in the old canon. There was that book, Truce of Bakura, which was the old canon book that immediately followed Return of the Jedi. And there was an interesting scene there, I thought, where Anakin's ghost appears to Leia to ask for forgiveness, and she says no. And
nice.
It's like... I like that, because Luke, you know, Luke can forgive his dad, but her dad killed her entire planet, tortured her. Like, she has every reason to not forgive Anakin, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I
also just like,
have way more respect for her.
Yeah, the difference the difference in Luke and Leia's personalities, too. Like, she's, like, more, like, hard line, you know, like, right and wrong.
Yeah.
He's, like, wibbly-wobbly.
And there's a point to be made, like, if Kylo becomes a hero at the end, like, not everybody's going to accept that, you know? So, yeah, maybe it's best to kill him off, you know? Like, well, and I don't mean that as just, like, not,
just
like...
die.
Well, and at the same time, I'm like, I don't want that to mirror Anakin Skywalker. Like, in the third movie, the villain turns good and then dies again,
nah.
So let's stop
like
ripping
not
off
like
these
that.
Movies.
No, he's like, and he's
let's
like
be
a
original.
Teen. Like, it'll be like, oh, my mom, you know, I'm not going to kill my mom. Or maybe he won't kill his mom and then do something
dad
else.
Dad is okay, but mom's not.
Well, you know, like, because he already killed his dad. He already went through that. Like, he's going to have some feelings about that,
he's
I assume.
He's already done that.
Right?
You hope so.
One would hope that that's going to be part of his...
I've done the whole
even if he stays evil...
Once is enough.
He's gonna have, because he's already been struggling, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And that was supposed to be his like moment to like, oh, now I'm fully evil, but I feel like it won't work that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. What do you guys think of the fact that it's rumored that it's Lord and Miller, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Have already been approached about The Flash.
I hope that's true.
Yeah.
Because they were the ones who wrote the original script for that movie.
Yeah, considering that project was originally attached to them, I would be very open. Like, I would love to see them come back to that.
Full
especially,
circle.
Well, especially exactly. considering, like, if anything, I think everyone kind of agrees, is the DCEU, if anything, needs levity.
Yes.
It needs more levity than
sure.
what it's had before. And Phil Lord and Chris Miller doing Flash, I think that, you know... That
right
there is exactly right up the
that
alley.
That has to be the
go.
Right kind of humor.
Yeah.
The
yeah. But at the same time, like now, you know, especially considering The Flash got delayed because Ezra Miller is now off doing Fantastic Beasts 2. Mm-hmm. You know, the early talk was that they might be waiting for Zemeckis, but if Phil Lord and Chris Miller want to jump on board, I'd say go
do
for
it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah. Oh, and then we haven't talked at all about Ron Howard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all
that's
that.
Right.
Ron
Howard's
over.
The one stepping in.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't
Which
even...
is interesting, like, considering he, well, he originally was approached by George Lucas to direct episode 1. Oh. And I used to kind of jokingly say, like, I used to jokingly blame Ron Howard for the problems of Star Wars.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's all
your fault. Imagine what it could have been.
You might actually be able to blame him for the problems of Star Wars.
Well, because it was when they released that book, it was right after episode 3 came out when they thought Star Wars was done. They made that big coffee table book, The Cinema of George Lucas. And Ron Howard wrote the foreword, and that's where he revealed, like, Lucas approached him multiple times in the early 90s. Like, I'm starting to work on the Star Wars prequels pretty soon. I'd love for you to direct, you know, the first movie. And apparently Ron Howard, he wrote in there, like, I kept telling George, you should direct it. I was like, oh,
Ron Howard!
Ron, what?
It's all your fault.
Yeah, why would he say that? Right. Maybe he secretly wanted Star Wars to fail.
He didn't...
Well, bear in mind, in the early 90s, we still all collectively thought of George Lucas as his visionary director.
That's true.
Like, yeah. There was a time.
Well, I say we as if
and
I
now,
was.
And now we realize he's an idea man, right. And he should let other people follow through with those ideas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would have liked to see...
for the most part aren't bad. But
I remember thinking, like, after reading that, like, I'd like to see a Ron Howard take on a Star Wars film. I would prefer if it was entirely his movie.
Exactly.
You know, instead of coming... I'm a little surprised to hear that a director as big of name as his, like, would want to come into this kind of... clusterfuck of a project.
Yeah, maybe because it's his penance for telling
exactly.
Lucas to direct.
You know, I'll help fix Star Wars.
People have given him crap for it all the years. So.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, Ron Howard's got great credits to his name. He's a talented director. He's also got some duds to his name too.
What was the last thing he did?
He did Inferno, and because he's directed the whole.
Oh yeah, so
Da Vinci Code series.
Oh,
yeah, which hasn't been received.
Yeah, that's not that much.
I didn't see
the
first one was fine. It was fine,
right? Yeah. For the source material, it was as good as it could be.
Did you guys see Angels and Demons? I didn't see that.
I didn't see that one.
Angels and Demons is ridiculous.
I heard it got a lot of.
It
mixed
was
reviews,
bad,
or at least lower reviews.
I didn't
than Da
Vinci. See Inferno. I was reading the book recently, and then I was gonna watch it after I read the book, but then I stopped reading the book. So.
Everyone was ripping apart Inferno, though.
Oh.
I don't know about the.
But
book
is that like the content or the?
Exactly. Like, is it Dan Brown's writing or is it Ron Howard's directing? Yeah. So that's why I don't want to put that in, like, oh, Ron Howard makes bad movies. Well, maybe.
So
he's made
what
some
was
bad...
the last good movie that he did then? To IMDb it.
I'm sure there's been a few since Apollo 13,
right?
Something
here. I'm like, didn't he do like a Nixon versus Frost? Was that him?
Oh, Frost Nixon. Yeah.
Yeah,
that was great. Yeah.
Okay.
With what's his name? Sheen. But not Mark.
Michael Sheen.
The good Sheen.
Michael
Sheen.
The
good Sheen.
No offense to Charlie Sheen, but, well, maybe offense to Charlie Sheen. Well, Martin Sheen's
Martin
a great...
Sheen
yeah,
is what
exactly.
I was thinking. I was like, the good Sheen?
Right.
Martin Sheen's not
that's
bad.
That's true, never mind. They're great Sheens. Emilio Estevez is technically a Sheen.
Yeah, he is.
Or I guess, rather, Estevez is their actual surname, right?
Right.
And then Sheen is a stage name. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Trying to find the last good movie he did. He was the director of In the Heart of the Sea.
Yeah.
I saw that recently.
Yeah, I remember
that
got X reviews.
It was, okay,
that was
that's the one with...
The quote-unquote true story behind
Chris
Moby Dick.
Chris Hemsworth and Tom Holland actually is in it. I'm trying to find the last, like, good movie, and I'm like...
Oh, he did Master and Commander, right?
I'm going... Frost Nixon was the last...
And was Cinderella Man good? I feel like it was
alright.
Yeah,
no,
I enjoyed it.
That was a great movie,
Did he do Master and Commander?
I think so.
Was that long?
I don't know what year that was. It was clearly.
Master and Commander was about 2000.
He did Far and Away.
I don't see Master
and Commander. Far and Away.
Unless he was like producer.
1992.
The last good movie he did was Frost Nixon, as far as this goes. Which was 2008.
Ron Howard can make a great movie.
He
has made some duds.
It was a little while ago, but he can do it.
Yeah.
So, we should probably move on to something a little more...
positive.
Like, positive, and something that's actually coming up, since Han Solo, who knows when the fuck it's going to come out now, because haven't pushed back the date.
No, they haven't.
But
which
I wouldn't
maybe
be surprised if they do.
Yeah,
they didn't for Rogue One, though, so maybe
But
they
I feel
won't.
Like whatever, like, I feel like the plans with Ron Howard are probably already in place well before they decided to make the announcement about Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
Oh, that's true.
So considering that, like, and they're still officially looking at May 2018 for Han, so...
Wow.
Who knows? I mean, Rogue One went through its reshoots, I think, like 2.5 months before release?
Yeah, it's true.
Or something like that? Yeah,
and,
so...
you know, it's not
Disney,
the best movie, but it's entertaining.
I
liked it.
Yeah,
I
enjoyed Rogue One.
I liked Rogue One better than The Force Awakens, actually.
Oh, wow.
So
I did not, but that's all right. That's just because I prefer to have hopefulness. After not enough hopefulness in
Rogue One, the Death Star
Leia
wasn't
saying hope.
even with her saying hope, it was not enough.
I like that with Rogue One, it was a Death Star. They didn't have to create a new Death Star.
That's true. I definitely agree that Force Awakens was following the beats of A New Hope too much. But I like the pacing of it, and yeah. I really loved all the new characters.
Yeah, there's so much to love about The Force Awakens amidst so many missteps, I think. But I think Rogue One, like, all around, I think made for a much more cohesive storytelling than Force Awakens.
So we're really moving on this time. So for the U.S. peeps, coming up starting Wednesday, June 28th, on BBC America, we finally get the third and final season of Broadchurch, which is the UK show that starring David Tennant and, oh God, I'm blanking on her name.
She's Olivia Colman.
Oh. Olivia Colman. Yes. I always get her name wrong. Anyway, it's murder mystery. Mm-hmm. Well, the first season was. Second season was, too,
actually. It's small town murder mystery, for sure. Yeah. David Tennant is like a grouchy... Surly. Detective. Mm-hmm. Yeah, surly detective.
He's like Han Solo, just not happy. Yeah,
right. He's not funny, unhappy really, Han Solo. I guess he's even sort of like a not really that snarky Sherlock, right? Just like Sherlock who needs antidepressants instead of heroin or whatever.
Yeah, there you go.
But meanwhile, Olivia Colman is she's partnered up with him. She's the town cop.
Yes.
And he's, like, the investigator who's been brought in from another, from, like, the big city.
He takes her job.
Yeah. So they're partnered up, and... Actually, she's kind of surly, too, but it's like she's a more, like, hopeful and naive kind of way, because nothing's really happened in her small town, I guess, at this point.
So he's kind of like the Fed who was called in to do the job that they weren't doing? Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
They needed somebody bigger than her. Yeah. Although he is called in before.
Right. It's like he's literally called in to take her job. Like, I think she was going to get a promotion that she did not get because they gave it to him. Yeah.
Okay, I see.
And then... There's
already that tension.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, this is the first time they meet, is actually. Like, it's very, very coincidental. He was literally just called in.
Yeah.
Then the murder happens. She's like, you're the dude that took my job yesterday. And someone killed someone else just for you. So, yes. So, it's like, not just about the murder, but it's about how all these people relate to each other, right? Because everyone knows everyone. Everyone knows everyone's business.
Tiny, tiny town on, like, the coast of England somewhere.
Right. Mm. And yet there is more business to uncover. And yes, half the show is shots of people looking out onto the beach.
Now, Broadchurch is the town?
Yes.
Is that it? Okay.
That is the name of the town.
What was the name of the American remake?
Grace Point.
Grace Point. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And Which was almost exactly the same, except...
Including
David Tennant, but playing an American this time, it didn't have the heart of it. It just was going through the motions, and then the way they changed the ending was like, what the?
Oh, they changed
the ending.
Spoilers,
because if we're telling you about season three in a second, so obviously.
We're going to be just, okay. Well, do you want me to say?
Tell me.
So the way they changed the ending is that in the American one, Tom, the best friend, is the one who kills Danny.
What?
And the reason he does it is he comes to the little shack on the cliff, and Danny's just run out of the house away from
Joe is still a pedophile.
Joe is still, yes.
Okay, all right.
Although... Not really, because they kind of dance around it. They kind of don't say...
Just a good chummy friend.
Yeah, it's weird. Right. It's like they don't want to say it.
Wasn't that the motivation behind the, like... So the character who was originally the killer is still a pedophile, but it's not him.
Yes. Danny's running out of the house. Uh-huh. I think that the characters still name it Danny. I can't remember anymore. It's almost forgettable. Uh-huh. And Tom sees him running out. And he actually, I think he tries to, like, hit his father because he knows what's going on, kind of.
Oh, so he's trying to protect Danny.
And he accidentally hits Danny. So it's not even murder.
Right.
And so it's like, why did you cover it up? Like, it's to protect the father, but it's going to get out anyway.
Right.
And so the show ends with Ellie.
So she's basically losing her husband and her son.
Yes. No, because it ends with her taken off with the kid.
Oh.
Huh. And so, like, David Tennant's calling her, being like, I know what happened, and, like, he's just, like, the phone's ringing, and she's obviously about
but, like,
to take off.
Like, what would even happen to the kid? Like, he'd go to juvie for, like, a couple months? Like,
yeah,
I don't even think that would happen, because he was a kid, and he didn't mean to kill him.
Yeah.
Father can back that up.
Yeah.
The father would go to jail because covering up the murder, but the kid probably would get out.
Yeah. I hate it when,
so stupid.
Like, when it's some, when it's a murder that's literally like self-defense that would actually, like, you could just prove that instead of spending all your time, like, covering up the murder to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, even though I love How to Get with Murder, like, the fact that the original murder is just, like, self-defense murder, you're like, what are you?
I didn't watch it. Oh, but I'm... No, it's okay.
From, like, the first season.
All the spoilers.
Like,
anyway,
which, you know, yeah. which leads to every season of Getting Away with Murder. But...
Okay. Well, still, it seems strange that, like, and I say this without having watched any of Broadchurch, but, like, or at least of Grace Point?
Yeah.
But it seems like, considering this seems like a story that structures heavily around this one particular murder mystery case, and completely changing the identity of the killer and the motive just feels like
it's
fundamentally changing in a way that killing the point of the story.
Obviously thought they were going to get to keep going, and they didn't, because it just, it was terrible.
But they obviously, I mean, like, why would you change it other than, like, because you're trying to be different? And if you're trying to be different, then why didn't you change the rest of it instead of making it, like, a shot-for-shot remake?
I mean, in the U.S. I mean, I remember having the same issue with, like, this is, like, ages ago, but, like, Michael Crichton's novel Red Sun, which is a murder mystery, and, like, where everything hinges on who did this and for and why, and then the movie just completely changed who did it. It's just
super frustrating.
Why? That was the whole point of the story, and you just took a left field just to, I guess, surprise even people who read the book or something. I don't know. It just, I hate when they do that to a murder mystery like that, where who did it and why is kind of central.
Yeah.
And not something that you can just sort of...
Well, and to like, assassinate her character by then being her, like, she's going to go on the run with her son, when she doesn't have to. She's a cop. Yeah. She knows that they can prove that he didn't mean to kill Danny.
Yeah.
He was trying to defend him. Right. Danny ran back, hit the oar. Like, because it's an oar from a boat. Like, I think that he...
It's just, like, the idiot ball, right?
Yeah, it's, like, this doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And especially because, like, Dave Tennant's leaving her a message basically being like, it's fine. Like, you know, he's like, oh, we're going to fix it. Like, it's really stupid. So, but yeah, character assassination.
Well, maybe she would have come right Grace back Point. Around in the second, first episode of season two.
I guess that's true.
That never existed.
So just stick with Broadchurch.
Watch Broadchurch. Even though the second season is almost infuriating. It's so good, but it's so...
It's really upsetting.
It's really upsetting. Yeah.
Upsetting in a good way or a bad way?
In a... Good, like, way,
in a good that, it's good storytelling, but it's painful.
Or at least the case. So look, the first season is the murder of an 11-year-old boy, and trying to find out who it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. Second season is the trial of the murderer of that 11-year-old boy, and also Gwen from Torchwood's got a murder case.
She's
going
involved
on.
In a murder case that, that David Tennant had been investigating, and it was like a big, you know, it got botched. Before he came to Broadchurch.
Yeah, that's
so
like
he decides
his
he's going
haunted
to...
past in season one.
So yeah, so he decides he's going to go back to the case and try and find out who did it.
Yeah.
With the help of Ellie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going on at the same time as the murder trial.
So I would say the murder trial is really good storytelling, but frustrating.
But frustrating.
And the new case is frustrating in storytelling.
Yeah.
I did not enjoy the
new
case.
Oh my god, James Darcy is amazing.
Yes.
Because I've only ever seen...
Oh, James Darcy, nice. I didn't know he was
like,
in it.
Yeah, he's really, he's really, really good in it.
Yeah.
So, season two is still really amazing television.
Okay.
It's one of those things where it's like, it's not as good, but it's like, because the first season was so good.
Right, yeah.
It's kind of
it's
hard.
It's at a bar really
high. Yeah,
exactly.
It's like the sophomore album is, you know, usually not as good as the first one, depending on who the band is.
But both those seasons are worth watching.
Okay.
And season three is a new case, but with all the same people.
Because they've kind of concluded the first case, how conclusively? Because like, does it seem like maybe they might re-explore it?
No, I mean, it feels like that was done. It could have ended with the second season, and that would have been fine.
Yeah.
Okay, because that's what I find kind of curious about. Like, because we just watched the trailer for the for the third season, and it seems like they're doing this as a conclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're making it.
I guess
like...
there is a way for something more definitive to happen to the murderer from the first season.
Yes,
so
there's
that
something
way,
that could happen, but I don't know that it does because as
you
far as I
anything.
Know, yeah, we haven't watched it yet. I was actually in the UK when the finale aired, and I think it shows how it wasn't as much of a cultural phenomenon because if I'd been in the UK when the first season finale aired, I would have been spoiled.
Right.
There's no way I would have gotten away with it. That was all over. Like, it was the water cooler talk everywhere.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. I never saw anything about Broadchurch when I was there. I mean, people watched it. It did really well still. But it wasn't as big of a deal.
It was no longer the zeitgeist.
Yeah. And which is part of why I think Chris Chibnall probably wanted to end with season two, but ITV was like, no, it's doing really well. Please make more. So he's like, all right, I can get one more season out of it, and then I'm done.
Right.
Okay. And now I got to go do Doctor Who.
And that's right. It's Chris Chibnall who's going to take over Doctor Who, or yes. Artie Hounds, or okay. whatever.
Which is interesting, because his episodes of Doctor Who in the past have not been the best episodes.
Yeah.
They've been okay.
Did he write them or just direct them? Okay. He wrote them.
Okay. Yeah. And he was showrunner on Torchwood for the first two seasons, okay. which are not the best
right. seasons. Those are not the seasons people like.
They're good. There's good. It's fun. But, yeah, you know.
It just takes a while to get into it.
But I think what's interesting is somebody asked Chibnall at, like, in an interview about coming to Doctor Who, and he said he turned it down over and over and over again, but the BBC just kept coming after him. Mm-hmm. And he finally went into a meeting and was like, okay, this is what I want to do, figuring that they would say, hell no. And the BBC were like, yes, let's do it.
Oh, all right. Interesting.
And somebody asked, does that mean you're going to be doing long-form storytelling a la Broadchurch? And he said, maybe.
Oh.
And I'm like, he's proven he can do long-form storytelling, so that I would want to see. And it might be
maybe
what
that'll be better.
Back
right?
to
maybe
Dr.
that'll be
Who,
better than episodic, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I saw spoilers for what happened on last night's Doctor Who.
I have not... Okay, I watched the first two episodes of this season,
yeah,
and I enjoyed them. And then I just didn't, like, I was out of town, like, watching with my friend, you know, so then now that I'm here, I'm like, I don't really care to catch up.
Is Moffat still showrunning?
It's his final season.
Okay,
because that's what I think he wrote the Christmas episode, too.
Peter Capaldi leaving at the end of the season?
I think the Christmas episode is when we will see the switch.
Okay.
He is done at that. Though.
Okay. And I
so
generally
before
gather that
Chris shows up, or is that the
yes,
first?
Yes, no. Okay. Chris Chibnall would be starting with a brand new Doctor, and
I generally gather that most fans are happy with that news, right?
Yes,
because I seem to like okay, so I'm many seasons behind on Doctor Who, but I'm around enough Whovians to know that generally it seems like a lot of people are not happy with Stephen Moffat lately.
Yeah,
how he's running things, and it seems like maybe a little less actual planning for where the story is going to go.
I was one of the people who was thrilled when he was asked to take on the show, because almost all of my favorite episodes from the first few series are Moffat's episodes.
Okay.
And I love Coupling is one of my favorite shows of all time. Mm. I think he is a really great, he can be a really great writer.
Yeah.
And I liked the first year. I basically liked Amy and Rory's story. There were problems with it, but for the most part, it was interesting. Mm-hmm. But then Clara came in, and it was more of the same.
Right.
We went from Russell T. Davies, where the companions were ordinary people put into an extraordinary circumstance,
right.
and then they thrive.
Yeah,
and
they're like the audience.
Yeah,
right. And now it's like the companion is already like
they're
everything.
A mystery that needs to be solved.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Every single one of his companions. Although I don't know anything about Bill because I have not watched the season at all.
She seems ordinary in the first two eps, but I have not continued.
Yeah, it just got. I don't know. It just got hard. So I watched the first season of Capaldi's Doctor, and I love Peter Capaldi, and I was really excited when he came on. And then I was watching the show, and I was like, this is the first time I've watched this show and been like, that's not the Doctor. Mm. I don't believe he's the Doctor. He was a fucking asshole.
Right.
He was awful. So I made
Which
it through that
thing,
season.
He plays well, but
yeah,
not
but
doctor.
That's not who. And it would be one thing if they were like, he's the Valyard, which is the future Doctor who was evil in the past stories. There is a future Doctor that goes evil.
So that's how that's how you feel about Peter Capaldi's performance.
It
would
well,
it seems
it was
like
the way
he's
he was
evil.
Written.
Could it work that maybe that's the reason?
Like, they
sort of
said over
theory.
And over. It's this, and it was the same thing. It was funny because when the last few episodes of David Tennant's run, and 10 is my Doctor.
Yeah.
I love 9 too, but 10 is my Doctor. The last few episodes of David Tennant's run, you know, Waters of Mars, I was like, holy shit, are they going to make 10 the Valyard? Because I was like, that would be amazing. And then they just, like, the next episode was like, no, it's fine. It's he went crazy last episode, but he's fine now.
Right.
Because they didn't want to, like, taint 10, I think, in that way.
Right, right.
And I think that's the thing. They're afraid to go there because
but like
they
every
don't
doctor
want
gets progressively more maniacal after 10.
Yeah,
you know?
Basically.
So would it just be one generation of the doctor that would be that way, or
yes, it's basically just I don't think
there is a future doctor
there
that
was
is
a
evil.
Future doctor that was evil. Yeah,
and then I guess he would die, regenerate, and be like, I'm good now.
Yeah, pretty much.
It
changes completely.
Exactly.
He could be, you know, I'm not sure how that works when the master was always evil.
So
do we need to get an episode
him?
Where the or
right,
a
there's
version
a good
of the master,
version of the master, yeah,
totally flip it,
right.
yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I haven't like I didn't watch, so that was 9 was for the first season of, right? Yeah. 9 was the 9th season of New Who. Oh, was okay. The first season of The 12th Doctor.
I thought it was 8.
Eight. Oh, you're right, it was 8. Yeah. Okay, so I haven't watched 9.
Okay.
And I probably will before Chibnall comes on, but at the same time, if we start completely fresh where even the companion is replaced, right, then you can... I don't know if I need to.
Yeah.
Which makes
well, me sure. Even but you wouldn't even need to anyway because it was Clara then, right?
Yeah. So well, no, but watch 10. But if Bill was still the companion for then the next one, watch. I would kind of want
to
watch. Oh,
you'd watch 10, but then you'd want to watch 9 to know what led the Doctor to wherever he is.
Yeah.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
I would still like to watch at least the one episode where we find out like the end of River Song's story.
That I do want to watch that one. I haven't seen it yet.
And I gotta say, like on some level, they like especially for such a long running series, they need to structure it as a way to have points where new viewers can jump in, you know, because you can't keep a show like this popular and surviving, you know, on the pretense that, you know, they're expecting everybody to watch already it. Be caught up. Yeah.
Because, it's different with New Who because you didn't have to have seen any of the stuff beforehand.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah, you could jump into
9. Eccleston
season, yeah.
Which is why it would be interesting to.
I loved him. I know. And especially considering like
I loved 9. Eccleston himself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I mean, I just remember like a lot of people like when it had. I think it was during Tennant's run that a lot of people were like, "Oh, you should be watching Doctor Who, but just go ahead and jump in like on Tennant's run." And a lot of people were telling me, "Oh, just avoid." And as I was watching, I was like, "No,
Eccleston's it's a great. Good season. Yeah. It's really fun."
Yeah. And I actually,
I miss 9.
I don't like. I didn't ship Rose and the Doctor. But I actually like her dynamic with 9 more than her dynamic with 10. Just
I'm putting it out there. It's funny because they're so different, but to me they're the most the same, and I think it's because of her because I did ship them, and so I can remember what happened with 9 and what happened with 10, but I think more of it as it doesn't matter. It's still the same. Whereas you know you see. Well, not Rose, but she's like, what, a avatar, basically?
Right.
In the Day of the Doctor with 11, and I'm like, yeah, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Right, it's not the same.
That's not the
because
same,
it's not the same at all.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's because, you know, there's one showrunner and one continuous, you know.
The War Doctor's the only one who actually sees her in that.
Yeah. And personality-wise, they're all different, you know, in universe, so.
But yes, I was, 10 Rose is one of my, well, Dr. Rose, but. Especially 10 Rose. I started watching New Who when Girl in the Fireplace came out. So I then went back and watched
the
all
first
of it,
but Doctor Who episode I saw was The 11th Hour.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That was the first one I saw because I don't know why I was. I think it was like my friend Ray would show me clips of 10, and I was just like, this is dumb. What is happening? And so
context is important.
And then I finally was like, okay, I will watch with you the premiere, you know.
Yeah.
And then I really loved it. So much.
That was a really great introduction. I had to go back and watch 11.
Everything.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's a brilliant, like a good, especially for such a long running series like this, there should be multiple kind of points that kind of draw you in, draw in new viewers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I like that this was about Broadchurch, but Doctor Who and Broadchurch but at least, are very intertwined.
I didn't know that the showrunner for Broadchurch was moving on to it, which is great. I mean, he sounds like. I mean, what other credits does he have other than...
It's just, Torchwood, and then I'm trying to think of what else he's done. I don't think it's a lot.
There's a couple, I feel like there's a couple Doctor Who episodes of his that I actually do really like.
Yeah.
But,
But still, I mean, it sounds like this, they needed fresh blood with a showrunner, so...
Yeah, and I mean...
For sure.
That's
why I think they really need to just completely start over with new companion everything, and it would be interesting if they do the long form storytelling, because it would be a different way to get people into it. It's like, here, we're gonna do a new thing, and they used to do the old Who used to do like 13 episode stories,
like just a complete arc for each series. Mm-hmm. I guess. Okay.
Let's see. He did that terrible show Camelot with.
Did
Eva
he also
Green?
Write Grace Point? Because if so. he did 2 episodes of Life on Mars.
No, I think.
I'm sure. I wouldn't
I think
be surprised
he just
he's
based on.
Grace Point,
but... Oh, and he did Camelot. Oh my
he
god, he created Camelot.
Yeah.
Alright, so it's a bit of a gamble.
He doesn't have a lot on his plate.
Amazing.
Or on his history.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
There's not a lot.
And incredible.
But, you know, if he's a fan, I mean, that's first and foremost the thing. Like, you know, people, especially, like, we were talking earlier with Flash, like, you know, would you love to see, like, Robert Zemeckis or Sam Raimi? It's like, I just want them to be a fan, whoever it is. You know, I want them, because I think, like, for example, Sam Raimi, at least with his first two Spider-Man movies, and I think, if anything, part of the problem with the third is that he didn't do everything he wanted. He wanted to do what the studio wanted as well. But, like, but it goes to show, like I think, you know, when you have somebody who's really a dedicated fan and really cares, that you have, I mean, sure, they can make a bad movie. But you know,
they
can at
not
least
be the fan that you are.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or they could be a fan and just not be that talented.
Right. Well, I remember, like with Rogue One, I remember when they initially announced Gareth Edwards, you know, all we really had to go off of because he's only, at that point, he'd only directed Monsters and the American, or the second American Godzilla.
Wow.
Monsters I liked, but the second American Godzilla was like, I was really underwhelmed by, so I remember being really I like this idea that they're talking about, this Rogue One movie about the rebels who steal the Death Star plans, and it's gonna be a war movie, but this Gareth Edwards guy. But what sold me was, like, when he came to Celebration showing photos of his 30th birthday, like, long before he was even involved with Star Wars, where he went to Tunisia and found the homestead and got blue milk and took a photo at the table, and was like,
that's really cool.
Okay,
that's
a fan. He cares.
Right,
so
he's
gonna make the best movie that he can, you know? So,
yeah. It means he's gonna try.
Yeah, exactly.
A for effort.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when they announced the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern, when they said Martin Campbell's going to direct, and I was like, Martin Campbell, he's a great director, he's got a lot of great credits to name. I don't think he gave two shits about Green Lantern.
Right, so, it didn't matter in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, when it's a big property like that, you want them to actually care.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, there's been plenty of, some of the Marvel directors have said that they never read any of the comics or something.
And that's the thing. But like, sometimes, like, that can be a fresh perspective too. Somebody
true,
who doesn't.
And
know
also, Marvel has like a unified vision, right? It all goes through Feige, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's enough support behind the scenes that it helps with that.
Yeah.
Something that I don't know if the creators necessarily care about the source material or not. Game of Thrones is coming back.
Yeah, finally.
new trailer this week.
It's a long time coming.
With more footage.
Yes, lots of footage to unpack.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Lots of Sansa being the best.
Yes.
Being badass. I think it's funny, though. I really realized, like, watching it and trying to figure out, like, what was going to happen. I think after the Red Wedding, I was like, fuck you, I'm not getting attached to anybody.
Right.
So I'm like, if anybody dies, it's not going to faze me. Because I think the only person I probably care about anymore is Tyrion.
Wow.
Which is weird. That's more about Peter Dinklage than the character. Like, but, I just think he's really great.
Oh, yeah. Well, plus there's also so many there's so many different side stories that with a lot of loose ends that need to be tied. Mm-hmm. And we have 14 episodes of the show left.
Oh, my God.
So true.
You really kind of have to expect to lose, like, we could lose somebody major every episode as we go, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many characters, and they're all, everyone's expendable in the show,
right.
You know? So,
well, and my one thing is, somebody at some point, somebody we care about, has to die and become a White Walker.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Okay, yeah.
So I was trying to figure out who I thought that was going to be, because I'm like, somebody, gotta happen to somebody.
It can, I mean, or at the least somebody that somebody we care about cares about. Right?
Yeah.
Like, at the minimum.
So it'll be an,
like,
emotional moment.
Right,
I'm
exactly.
Just, like, there's going to be a White Walker that dies, that it's going to be like, I don't want to have to kill you again.
Like, I care about Davos a lot, but maybe not everyone cares about Davos. But if Davos
awesome.
And Jon are, like, on a mission together, you know, and then Davos dies, and Jon would care a lot, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
But don't die, Davos.
Right.
You will survive.
Please don't.
What worries me is that last couple of shots where you see, like, it's, like, 12 people forming a little circle, like, fighting off the White Walkers, and, like, you know, like, Jon's there.
Yeah.
Tormund's probably there. Like, if we... Oh,
wait. Yeah, Tormund. Tormund's gonna die. Tormund's gonna die.
Do you think that's
Ian
why
Brand
they have him in the post? I mean, because he has one of the posters
that
just came out,
too.
Right, and he's
not born
enough
for that. And, like, I'm like, why did they make him a regular?
He's a major character now.
Yeah, I guess he is.
I mean,
he's
kind of like,
he was a regular
his own poster.
Yeah.
He was a regular last season.
To get his own poster?
He's like, John is the king of the North, and he's kind of his right-hand guy.
That's going to die because John would care about that.
Oh, but no, but he and Brienne need to live happily ever after. Like, I just want to see.
I don't think Brienne wants to live happily ever after.
And also, we have to see, of course, dragons fighting White Walkers.
Yes.
Right? Dragons rescuing.
Well, that's also...
Is that what's
going to
happen, you think?
What if a dragon gets taken over by the Night King?
If a dragon becomes a White Walker dragon.
I think one of the
shit.
Dragons is
that's going to happen for sure. That's going
to
happen.
I would assume that's probably how the season ends. To be honest, I'm going to guess
that
scene with them in the circle
is how the season ends.
I don't think that's how the season ends, but I'm guessing there's that, and that's when Dany shows up.
Right. No, yeah,
and that's when everybody else finally joins.
And then we see Beric Dondarrion. Dondarrion. Yeah, Dondarrion. Yeah. Like we see him like in the north at least. So mm-hmm. I think yeah. he's with them.
Yeah, too. I think he's with the flaming sword.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. Like he like mm-hmm. if the Hound is there as well, and Jon and.
Tormund and Davos.
Well, I just said his name.
Sansa.
Beric.
Oh, Beric Dondarrion. Okay. Thank you.
Like characters.
I mean, there's sort of three characters who have quote unquote died before, and right? They come back.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see like everyone's like coming like forming new alliances, yeah. I guess, right? And then all the dissolution of all the old ones that we've gotten accustomed to, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a safe bet that we're gonna see Cersei join forces with. I blanked on his name. The Greyjoy uncle.
Oh yeah, yeah. Euron Greyjoy. Yes, Euron. And you know who else probably? Wait, do I know this? No, I don't know. Tarly's, right? Because the Tarly's were with Highgarden.
Yes.
But they are shitty, except for Samwell.
Right.
So they
won't. Exactly.
And it's not that they and sister were nice, but they don't have any control over anyone.
Yeah. Well, although, hold on. Another thing about Euron. Last we heard, Euron said he wanted to go try to marry Daenerys.
Yeah, but she's not going to want that. No, she's so not going to. So he would go with Cersei.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, Highgarden, we left with Highgarden and Dorne teaming up, right?
Yes.
And that's not going to go well because they're not relevant.
Well, I imagine they're
joining... In the show,
right. I mean.
In the show, they're not relevant.
I imagine they're just going to join Daenerys' crew at some point.
It's almost like you can guess what they were told about the end of the series.
Right, by who they just, like,
by who they're like, oh, we're not going to spend a lot of time on the Sand Snakes, because they're obviously not that important.
I'm still so bitter that they ruined, like, they destroyed Dorne. They did it so wrong. It was really so bad. Dirty.
Yeah.
Especially Ilaria. Like, Ilaria is the opposite of who she is in the books. Mm-hmm. You know, she's, like, the character that advocates for peace.
Right.
And then instead she's like, I'm a murderer Doran, and I'm going to do this. And
they sort of essentially made Doran that character and then killed him. Yeah.
And then just got rid of Arianne, who's the most interesting character in Dorne, but whatever, it's fine.
I would have loved to see Doran, like, still involved in all this. Like,
But no, he's gone. Yeah. Off to be Ra's al Ghul, which is cool.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
So what are some cool other things that you saw in the... You mentioned Casterly Rock.
Yeah, you see... you see Daenerys' Unsullied storming some sort of castle. So you don't see an outside look, but you see a lot that makes it seem like this might be Casterly Rock, which would make perfect sense considering that Tyrion is now Daenerys' hand. And Tyrion knows Casterly Rock like the back of his hand. Like, they even mentions that Tywin once put him in charge of like the sewage system and stuff like that. Like I wouldn't be surprised.
So he really knows.
He sends them in through the.
I think that could. Yeah. Especially considering that they make a big point of like Casterly Rock has never been taken.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, the Lannisters are at their weakest.
The more you make a big point of that kind of thing, the more you know it's going to happen eventually.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And we see Daenerys back at her birthplace in
Dragonstone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You see her like walking by all of Stannis's old banners, tearing them down. Like you see her putting her hand across like his little war table and everything.
It's her kingdom.
And now she's gonna make it hers. Yeah, I guess which she hasn't been since she was a baby.
Yeah.
You know? So,
And my favorite, of course, is Sansa saying her father's words.
Yes.
That the lone wolf dies or the pack survives.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear that coming from Sansa's mouth, because they're clearly trying to make it seem that, for whatever reason, Littlefinger is trying to break the Starks apart, specifically Sansa and Jon.
Right.
And I'm just not in the camp that believes that she would take those words to heart, especially knowing, like, she knows how duplicitous Littlefinger can be.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that they're just trying to play off, like, maybe she's starting to...
I think she's going to try to play him. Like, she wants him to think she's on his side because he can be useful to her.
Right.
But at the end of the day, like, if push came to shove, she would shove him.
But then they...
Off a cliff.
Yeah, off a cliff.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
Oh, but, and also Arya's coming home.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be great to see Sansa and Arya finally, like, hash out their issues and, like, hopefully mature into a healthier sister relationship.
Well, not to mention Arya and Jon.
Of course, and that's just going to be...
They were probably the closest of all the Stark siblings.
That's just going to be joyful.
Yeah, but her saying Ned's line, I think, speaks volumes to saying that, like, that she wants it... That, like, indicative that she wants to stick with her siblings.
Mm-hmm.
that Chandra maybe Shan's she'll
family
turn,
is important.
Yeah,
she already fell
turns
for
Littlefinger.
Littlefinger's shit once.
Yeah.
And how badly did that
right,
go?
Right, exactly.
And she called him out on it.
Yeah, fool me
yeah.
once, right?
Yeah. So hopefully,
please don't make her an idiot.
Yeah, I'm hoping they're just trying to make it seem like maybe she's going to start like going against Jon because
well,
of what Littlefinger's whispering in her ear.
I think they've pushed that so hard even in like the, not necessarily the marketing, but you know, like interviews and stuff. Like, oh, maybe Sansa's going to, so that you know that's not going to happen because they just told you the story.
Yeah, like we were just talking about that last shot from the last season finale where she where her smile goes away when she looks at Littlefinger and people are all talking about like, oh, maybe she's like starting to doubt whether or not Jon should be king. It's like, no, I think she's starting to worry that Littlefinger
is
still
gonna
here.
He's going
to
interfere with, like, her, with her happiness.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He's gonna put a wedge between them somehow, you know. So
yeah.
I'm hoping that this season we see her kind of get revenge on him in some, you know, or
I think that
place.
We will.
Yeah.
Also, was he on Arya's list?
Littlefinger? Oh. Does Arya know that he betrayed?
I don't
That's
think
the thing. Like,
was.
She doesn't know that he was, so he wasn't.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I don't think so.
He would be if she knew.
Yeah. Oh, God.
But doesn't Sansa know? I feel like, he sort of admit it when he's killing Lysa, or is that just the book and I'm just
I think Sansa might know, just, I think she, like, rather,
Either
I think
she figured it out,
I think
or...
Littlefinger made it, try to make it seem to her that he had no choice.
Right, like, I
but
just
I,
had to
I don't
do
think
it
she,
to...
like, knew that,
he
you know,
planned
he
it all.
Like, pulled a knife on his neck and everything. Which, by the way, that Entertainment Weekly shot of all the Stark children together, you see Arya with that knife.
Yes.
So...
And it's really prominent.
Yeah.
It's like, here, let's look at everybody. And Arya has a very important knife in her.
Right.
Like
if Arya,
it's like front and center. I'm like...
If Arya and Sansa team up to take out Littlefinger...
That's what I want. Because it's like, you know, like you have like the queen and her knight, right? It's like, I want that to be like Sansa and Arya.
Yeah.
I think this season has to be the season that the intrigue ends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That all the infighting.
Right, because
we
have
to get,
people
like,
have to join
Cersei has to die
to
probably at Jaime's hands.
We need to have the Starks reunite, all of them, including Nymeria, by the way. Because we know
Nymeria's
she's somewhere.
Nymeria's gotta come back. Nymeria's gotta come back.
Because when there's only two dire wolves left, you need to feature them both.
Right. Yes. Oh my god. Are there only two?
Only
left?
Two, Ghost and Nymeria.
Summer died?
Summer died when Hodor...
oh, that's right.
Yeah,
oh, that's
Summer
right.
died
oh,
then.
Oh, my God.
Lady died...
right.
Yeah,
it's long
someone.
Ago in a galaxy
then,
far away.
Grey Wind died at the Red Wedding.
Right.
So
right.
is that all of them?
I think... and then Shaggy Dog.
Shaggy Dog.
Yeah,
oh,
right.
Shaggy
Dog was
his head was chopped off, Oh, my God.
So Nymeria... But Nymeria has never been referenced again in the show, but my understanding is that, like, there was a line in the books at some point that mentions that there were rumors that
that
in
she
the
was like leading a pack.
Yeah, there's just this
mm-hmm.
massive she-wolf that's like
mm-hmm.
leading wolves. Just, oh man, just seeing like her reunite with Arya.
Yeah.
Ugh, I would love to have that happen.
Oh, also someone else is coming back that I don't know, you guys may not care about him, but I care deeply. Gendry's done rowing, he's back.
If he comes back with massive guns.
Right. So I guess I won't tell you anymore about what he's doing because I guess it's spoilers. Mm. But he is coming back. That's for sure.
Yeah, when's the last time we saw him?
Season 3. Because after Melisandre raped him.
Right. That was when Davos broke him out.
Yeah.
Rowing away. And he's just been rowing.
Exactly.
Something like he just got turned around on his way to Essos and came
right
back.
He's going to somehow make it all the way to the east.
What is he going to do? Because I can't imagine Daenerys is going to be like, she's going to be like, no, you need to die because you're a Baratheon.
I feel like she, hopefully she would have people counseling her to not do that if that was her intention.
Right, yeah.
She would have Tyrion be like, that's not the way to start. But I could tell you what he's doing, but it would be spoilers.
Well, no, tell us.
Okay.
Fuck it, I don't
there's
care.
Spoilers, guys. All right. Well, he's going to join up with Jon and help him go fight the White Walkers.
Nice.
Because,
okay,
I mean, he...
That's cool.
I don't know if this will be part of the story, but his thing in the books, which I hopefully will be relevant, is that he was taught by that one dude who was one of the only people who knew how to make Valyrian steel.
Oh.
So that guy gets killed
when
they're looking for Gendry, but Gendry knows how to make Valyrian steel.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. And no one else does, and that's what kills White Walkers.
Yeah.
So,
that's a good point.
Yeah.
Gendry could be extremely instrumental in destroying the White Walkers. Because there's not only...
That
like
obsidian.
Because if he can make Lyrian steel,
mm-hmm.
and if there's tons of obsidian,
right.
presumably, at Dragonstone,
yeah.
there you go. That's your way. That's,
and
that's
and,
your only
and then
way
actual dragons.
Out.
And
yeah.
you're good.
Yeah.
Except
yeah.
for, you know, when it's one dragon versus two dragons.
seriously, one of those dragons is going to be turned.
Although this reminds me of, like, I remember the episode where... One died, the giant.
Oh,
like,
that's right.
Yeah, I just remember, like, somebody had put online, well, there goes my plan for how, like, where he'd drawn over One's feet, like, Valyrian steel boots with dragon steel spikes. Perfect. Just have him walk around.
That would have been epic. Yeah. That would have been an amazing conclusion.
So am I the only one who doesn't think Daenerys will ever be on the throne? Actually,
you're not alone.
I think she dies right before.
I mean, I definitely think one of the big three has to die in, like, heroic final battle.
Right.
Yeah.
I would rather it not be Daenerys, just for the sake of it, because, like, two dudes and a girl. But, yeah. And I feel like Tyrion, I mean, Jon already died, so I think it should be Tyrion, but it could be Daenerys.
Three kings.
That's
queens. That's king, queen.
or maybe they will break up into seven kingdoms again at the end.
Yeah.
But that was my plan for the books. But right. Now, like, half the people that I wanted to be ruling are dead in the show. So I guess that's
also,
not what
this
happens.
Sounds too happy of an ending to kind of hope for.
So. Right. Exactly.
Something super tragic. It's either going to be that or. I mean, I think tragedy. Everybody expects Daenerys and Jon to end up having to get married.
They're gonna. I don't want that in my life. They're totally gonna hook up, and I don't want it. I'm disgusted. I know that incest is okay.
Cousins,
she's
right?
An aunt.
Oh, wait,
she's an aunt,
yeah,
which is
right,
even
yeah.
More than cousins.
Yeah,
that's a more right. Blood. but that's okay. I mean, incest is fine in Westeros.
Yeah.
As long as you're not brother and sister, then they're kind of like, except unless you're Targaryens.
If you're Targaryens,
really, they're fine. It doesn't matter what they are. They're fine.
It's expected.
Even though it's gross.
As long as you're not Viserys.
Yeah. Oh God, Daenerys was horrible. Yeah.
Oh God.
But yeah. So Daenerys and Jon will totally hook up. Hopefully they won't have a baby. But I guess if they have a baby, then one of them can die.
Maybe that's how they find out that they're related.
Oh shit.
I mean, hey, doesn't Bran know?
Bran shows up 5 minutes too late. Yeah. They're literally coming out of the bedroom, and it's like, so. She's your aunt.
Right. Yeah.
You. But you are a Targaryen, so it's
right.
Fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Targaryens really do that Stark
good
style.
News and bad
yeah.
News.
Because yeah. Bran is literally the only person in Westeros who knows.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because the Three-Eyed Raven's gone.
Right.
So,
and
wow.
Yeah, everyone else is dead.
Yeah. So,
how do you bring that up?
It's going to be really important to get that
John.
Information.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, we know Bran's going to show up in Winterfell because we see him
in
the Winterfell courtyard
in the crypts,
or whatever. The crypts. Or,
okay.
He's somewhere in Winterfell, right?
Yeah.
In his wheelchair. Because where else would he have gotten the wheelchair?
Yeah.
Well, nobody can carry him anymore.
Exactly. So even if he shows up after Jon leaves to go fight or parlay or diplomacy, whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
They can just send a raven to Jon and be like, by the way, you're a Targaryen.
You should probably know.
Yeah. So,
this is a thing.
So I feel like Jon has to find out this season.
Okay.
Unless for some reason they're like, oh, it's not relevant, so why tell him?
No, I think he's got to find out this season. Because I think the last season is just going to be White Walkers.
Well,
and then some conclusion at the end.
I know there are a lot of people who point out, like, maybe because he's the son of the eldest Targaryen.
Right. He would be above.
Yes.
But he's also a bastard child.
That's the question. Is he a bastard or not? In the show, I feel like they'll just be like, he's a bastard because it's too complicated otherwise. But in the...
Well, because Lyanna is of noble birth?
No, because Targaryens in the books also could have polygamy.
Oh.
It just wasn't practiced often. But there's, like, the way that the book, like, the theory of the book is laid out, it's like... The Kingsguard were there guarding Lyanna and the baby, but the Kingsguard's oaths only to protect the royal family, which includes the law people. So, like, they wouldn't be there protecting a bastard unless he was legally the heir.
That's
true. Interesting.
So, they're like, oh, Lyanna and Rhaegar must have gotten married.
Yeah. But, I mean, at the end, still, like, I feel like... Who legally has
right? Who
really
would know?
Yeah,
that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
and Daenerys could legalize him if she felt like it,
right?
If she was like, I might die and I want to have an heir,
right?
It's you, Jon.
And frankly, like Viserys was the heir in that case,
mm-hmm.
And you know the only reason he's not is because he's dead.
Exactly.
So and you know and that was a whole case of like Renly's whole claim to the throne was the whole idea of like should we even care about the hierarchy? Like I'm the one more fit to be king.
Mm-hmm.
Let me be king. You know?
Right.
The one people actually want to follow
exactly.
Yeah.
As opposed to just
yeah.
The
exactly. There are tons of people who would not have cared that Stannis is the next, you know, Baratheon in line, you know?
Yeah.
Because nobody likes Stannis.
And
yeah.
So then who would the people of Westeros
Davos
choose,
did,
do we think? I guess
he had one friend.
Jon's been there.
Yeah.
Most
people know
Jon,
and he was commander of the Ninth Watch, so I guess he's definitely got, like, respect in terms of, like, as a man of the people, I guess, whereas Daenerys is, like, an invader. with Dothraki,
especially if she
dragons.
Actually right. if she ends up having to invade King's Landing. Yeah, neither, people there aren't gonna like her.
Yeah. Right, but neither of them have ever been to King's Landing.
Right, right? No. Neither of them are really native there. Neither of them really. I mean, Jon knows. They both have their experience ruling. So technically, they both have been rulers. Yeah. It's like their resumes. But
well, they both. Yeah.
Let's see who can do this job.
And that's the nice thing about that. We know they're both not obviously they're good of heart, but at the same time, they're both reluctant rulers. They're both people who didn't want that position. They just, you know, but they realized that responsibility had to fall to somebody.
And, yeah, that's true. Yeah. I guess, like, in terms of public opinion, the last Targaryen was a mad king, and people really hated him. So that doesn't look good for Daenerys. No. But then the Lannisters were even worse, so maybe you'd be like, oh, old times.
anybody but else.
Yeah. Right. On the flip side, I think everyone pretty much knows that Ned Stark was a good, honest, honorable man. Mm-hmm. So like maybe the plebs, maybe the common folk could have been fooled into thinking that it really was Ned who was the traitor, so then they wouldn't like his son.
Yeah.
But, like, the other nobles all know that Ned was the most honorable, so they would probably be very willing to follow Jon if they had no other choice.
Yes. In fact, maybe in the grand scheme of things, it's just better if everybody just doesn't know who Jon's father
that's
really
is. That's exactly what I was... Yeah. That was exactly my point. Like, if they realize that he's Targaryen, they might be like, oh, shit, just do the same.
I think that could be really interesting if there's a moment where Bran comes to that decision.
Right.
Where he's about to tell and he realizes, I really shouldn't.
Right, because Jon Snow is more honorable than Jon.
So now he's going to tell him in the first episode, so we're going to be like, never mind that.
But being Ned Stark's son, or, you know, rather being perceived as Ned Stark's son, might be a lot of the reason why Jon can be accepted as a ruler for Westeros.
That's clout.
You have to think, too, going back to the Daenerys as the invader, she's not only an invader, she's bringing the Dothraki with her.
Exactly. She's got the Dothraki
board.
So
they're really not good.
She's got dragons who are going to cause massive destruction.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it's to Jon's credit that I don't think he really wants necessarily to rule.
No. Mm-hmm.
He was happy on the wall until it all went to shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
He's not going to King's Landing.
Yeah, he didn't even want to be Lord Commander. Yeah, like he was everybody else doing.
I just
want to
stop the White Walkers because I believe this is happening in
everybody else. I mean, and for the now, he is the leader they need because they need someone who's going to focus on the real threat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess Daenerys, I can't even remember. Daenerys has heard about the White Walkers now or no? Not yet.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay, so I
think they have any idea.
Once she hears from Jon. And maybe he's going to go get a proof or whatever, right?
Right.
So, but once she hears about it, then she will definitely turn her focus to that as well.
Yeah.
But since Jon is already in the process of doing that, because he already knows.
Because they ever meet and get to a point where they really trust each other and know that the other person is somebody somebody they can trust. And,
because Tyrion
he's going to want to tell.
Yeah.
Tyrion knows Jon.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he can vouch for him.
Yeah, Tyrion will vouch for Jon.
Yeah, and at the same time, like, Jon's, if he feels like Daenerys is... You know, if he comes to a point where he trusts Daenerys, he's gonna tell her about everything that's going on in the north and how this is really the real threat to Westeros.
Right.
None of the other squabbles between any of these families, none of that matters.
Right. And that would be a good contrast to when Cersei I think she even got the arm, right? Like the little dead withered arm, and she was just like, I don't care. I don't give a shit.
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
but it could be interesting if he maybe even convinces Daenerys before she either before or maybe during, her attempt to take back King's Landing, maybe direct your forces north, because this is the real battle, and it's overflowing
right now.
You know?
Yeah, and Jaime will probably kill Cersei for us, because it'll probably be a throwback to when he had to kill the Mad King.
Right.
I'm starting to worry about Jaime, though, because you see those shots of him in this trailer where he's running in a battle, and, he could be a Casterly Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll...
And they're probably going to lose Casterly Rock.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's safe until Cersei dies, though, because I think he does have to kill Cersei, in terms of full circle.
Yeah. Although it could be interesting, maybe, if that's the case, maybe he and Tyrion might meet there.
Yeah.
And maybe get convinced that he shouldn't be siding with Cersei so much. You know?
I hope so. I hope that there's although I guess their parting really wasn't, they didn't part on bad terms.
No.
Except for the part where Jaime let him out and then Tyrion went and killed their father.
Right. So maybe Jaime's a little mad about that.
I mean, there's a question of how much do we trust what he told Bronn, that Tyrion's essentially sort of dead to him.
Right. Because he killed the dad. Yeah.
Yeah. But is it a lie?
Right. Once he sees him, I feel like he sees him, he's going to change his mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like Jaime, of all people, would understand why Tyrion would want to kill Tywin. Yeah. You know?
Jaime's kind of soft-hearted.
Yeah. But he understands more than Cersei.
Right.
How much of a burden Tywin was to Tyrion. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, yeah. How much of a terrible father he was.
That whole trial and what he did to him. That was awful.
Yeah. It truly was. Yeah. You know, he had to understand more than anybody that Tywin really wanted Tyrion dead out of his life, and right. You know, out of the burden
probably
of being like
because
that.
Tyrion's actually a Targaryen.
Yeah. No,
but that's a whole other theory.
No, he's not. I will no. If he's the Targaryen, I will be so
who
mad.
Who do you think the third Targaryen?
I don't think there's a third Targaryen. What do you mean?
There's supposed to be three that can like.
Yeah, but I don't think you don't really have to be a Targaryen to fly the dragon. I feel like that's just like what they said.
Yeah,
because
maybe it's
they
an
wanted to.
It'll be Davos.
But also,
well, then there's the whole theory of is Jon actually the prince that was promised? Is it somebody else? Because there's all I've read recently. Right. Like I read a theory that Davos is actually the one. I was like, that would be weird. I like it. Let's do it.
But no, it is possible. It is possible that Tyrion is a Targaryen, but I hope that's not the case. I don't need more secret Targaryens in my life.
Yeah, I feel like that might overcomplicate what.
Yeah,
what
I feel like it's just like the dragons don't. I don't think that the dragons really have to be tied to Targaryen blood. Basically, I think that that's just like that's because the Targaryens wanted to be in control of the dragons.
I want him to ride a dragon though.
he'll ride a dragon.
He's already shown that he can befriend them. Yeah. Kind of, sort of.
But that's the thing. Yeah, he's shown that he can befriend them. Yeah. And
they trust him more than a regular person. Yeah.
And in the books, like, he would dream of dragons when he was younger, etc. Yeah. So, like, he definitely is meant to be a dragon rider.
Yeah.
But at the same time...
Oh, especially that moment. Like, I just remember that moment where he and where he first sees them flying over, the ruins of... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just,
that was amazing.
Old Valyria,
So, he'll definitely ride one. Yeah. But if one of them is going to turn to the dark side, then... They only need two dragon riders.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, that's a good point.
Unless Tyrion's the one who ends up being a White Walker, and then they have he's flying. Oh.
With his no. I'm sure the Night King wants the dragon for himself.
Yeah,
he'll ride the dragon.
Yeah. So 2 weeks? No, is that 2 weeks?
It's July.
Oh,
16th.
July 16th.
Wow.
One episode before Comic-Con.
3 weeks from today.
All right.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
3 weeks from today.
Oh, and then I didn't mention, like, what was it? There's that one shot of what really clearly looks like it's the Hound, like, with the sun behind him. And it's, like, it looks like it's somewhere in the south. And a lot of people are pointing that, going, like, maybe he and the Mountain will finally meet and Clegane Bowl.
That's gotta happen.
It's gotta happen.
Yeah, considering they brought them both back.
Yeah. Because otherwise, you killed them off. You killed everybody else. They just stayed died.
Yeah.
Or appeared, I guess.
And how better of a way to pay off returning the Hound than having him face off against his brother. So.
That's true. That's the most satisfying conclusion.
Right. Well, don't expect to be satisfying.
Well, I don't think anything in the show is
narratively
satisfying.
Exactly. I mean, not
I expect the show to end and I'd be like, well, that happened.
Like, Lost 2.0.
It'll be like Broadchurch, which was great. Storytelling the second season, you're like, but it's still not satisfying.
Right, mad.
I'm still in denial about what happened to Oberyn.
Oh God, yeah, but that was I loved Oberyn. He was so great.
Right.
And he was like the only person in all of Westeros that seemed to be like, you know what is bad? Rape and murder are bad.
Yes.
And I think that
we shouldn't do those things.
Exactly.
What a thought. Instead, Daenerys is bringing Dothraki. Oh, yeah. That's what they do.
But that's part of the show. Something tragic happens, you have to kind of have to be like, you know.
No skin off my back.
Yeah. That's why I'm saying don't get attached to anybody.
I can't help it, though. Like, that's why I'm almost
they're all going to die by the end.
Sansa and Gendry are the two that I'm most attached to.
Do you ever see that? Was it, it was right after season finale before last when we all thought Jon was dead. That, like, somebody edited together.
When nobody believed Jon was dead, you mean?
Right, exactly.
When we all knew Jon was not dead.
But then I remember, like, somebody had re-edited that ending where, like, Ollie comes up to him and says, like, yeah, you know, your uncle Benjen is out waiting for you. And then they cut to the shot of Benjen and Jon meeting in Winterfell in the first episode.
Oh.
And make it look like Jon's coming out to meet Benjen. They give a big hug. Credits. It's like, denial.
That's awesome. Ollie was terrible. Can we just discuss Ollie was a terrible, terrible plot device?
You know, though, that like he was a terrible character when I didn't feel bad when they were like hanging him.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah.
Kill him. He's bad. No.
Yeah, but I mean, his parents were murdered.
Like, I understand, but
this
like,
is her in terms of. Helped.
Yeah. No, I just mean, like, in terms of the character, like, to bring him in to just be like, oh, well, this is going to be the person that kills Jon, like, instead of having it be one of the knights. you know, yeah. Watchmen, yeah. who is genuinely concerned with the way that things are going, whatever, you know? Yeah. I was just like, all right, I yeah. guess.
He's a kid.
You have to have he's someone killed
John.
He's a kid
who was played, basically. He's yeah. just a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
As
yeah.
opposed to somebody, you know.
Who has real adult. Reasons to, yeah.
But I liked seeing the way that it affected John.
Like, yeah,
especially
sure,
that last
that
moment
yeah.
to look at him and realize there's no coming back from this. You
but,
know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. It just goes to show you, like, John's a good guy, but...
He's an nice boy, though he is a little emo, but...
Yeah. All right, well, we've run kind of late, but I can't help it. I want to talk about Spider-Man
all right,
really quick.
Let's do it. Sure, let's talk yeah. about Spider-Man Homecoming.
Spider-Man Homecoming. The reviews are all really good, and I'm trying not to... Well, the feedback. It's not really reviews.
Right.
Yeah.
But
because the embargo hasn't
it.
Officially lifted yet.
No.
Right.
Right. But everything that we've seen so far also mm-hmm. just looks so much fun.
Yeah.
And just so pure. So mm-hmm. pure.
The only complaint I saw from any of the reviewers who saw it this last Friday was that... I guess he wanted to see Ben die because he was complaining that the problem with not giving the origin story again and glossing over it so quickly is that you lose the tragedy of the story and you're just instead going right into the fun. And it's like, yeah, but everybody yeah. fucking knows that Ben
yeah.
died.
Right.
And it doesn't
and
have
I don't
want to
see Batman's
tragic.
Father
right.
or parents die for the 85th time.
Yeah.
So let's just skip.
I mean,
and
that's
and
the thing, too. Like,
we'd
Batman's
all
personality
die.
Is deeply affected by his parents' death.
Right.
Yeah.
But Peter Parker is not all that... Like, he is a much more lighthearted character to begin with,
yeah.
despite
yeah.
this. So it's like,
and
I feel like weighing it down...
Mm-hmm.
He well, and you already, in Civil War, you can feel that he
yeah.
feels responsibility.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
don't need
he
it
doesn't
to
need
be about
exactly.
Ben's death and making up
and
for it.
And he can be a lighthearted, comical character, but still have Uncle Ben's death be very important to
mm-hmm.
him. Like,
yeah.
I expect to see poignant moments, and,
mm-hmm.
and I'd like to see at least a reference to...
Right, I'm
to,
sure they'll talk about
to,
it.
To,
yeah,
yeah, to how important he was. So
mm-hmm.
it's just, yeah, but you don't... It's a still it's Spider-Man. It's a
right.
Spider-Man movie. It's an origin we've seen time and time again.
Yeah, and seeing it does affect the mood of the film. Like, if you're watching it in the film itself, it does bring it down to some degree. You
yeah.
know, you have to, like, come back from that. Like, even in the Raimi version, it's like, I'm really depressed now for a little bit, and now I gotta, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it seems like that's not the tone that they want to go for.
Yeah.
Right, right.
It's basically a John Hughes movie. Somebody compared it to, they said it was, like, the MCUs can't hardly wait.
It is, yeah. I mean, like, even
saying,
the
yeah.
way that they're doing, like when they the first promotions that they were doing, it looked just like, you know, Breakfast
the
Club
first,
kind of thing.
The first American trailer for
uh-huh.
the trailer was the best one, and it does. Mm-hmm. I was like, this could be a John Hughes movie.
Yeah.
I am so on board.
Yeah.
Except that, you know, that I'm afraid because how much is Sony involved and how much
right.
how much do they get?
Yeah,
it?
I think that's a lot of why we were kind of worried, like,
yeah.
even with the ads looking good, you know.
I think their involvement has been showing us way too much in the trailers.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. And also, not necessarily related, but my other concern was just, like, how many guests, not guest stars, but, you know, like, characters and, like, of important plot points,
mm-hmm.
they
yeah.
were like, are gonna be in this
well,
movie.
And, like,
yeah.
Matt
yeah.
pointed out that whatever the final battle is, so with the Vulture, I'm assuming...
Yeah.
Iron Man cannot show up.
Oh, yeah.
Spider-Man has to do that entirely
right.
by
we don't want it
himself.
To be...
Yeah.
It can't be that he saves the day.
Yeah,
it's...
Iron
yeah.
Man Homecoming.
Yeah.
yeah. And
yeah.
I think that's a lot of the reason why they're, for one thing, they're really pushing, you know, Tony Stark's involvement in this story. Obviously, he's all over that poster. But, I mean, like, I feel like, especially for general audiences, they want this movie really needs to establish that this is a new Spider-Man that's part of this universe.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that with future Spider-Man movies, it's a little bit more character-centric. I mean, that's
yeah.
one thing. That's one of the things I love so much about Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2 is that it doesn't fall... Like, if anything, one of the issues I have with that is the lack of Doc Ock, whereas most superhero
mm-hmm.
sequels tend to be much more villain-centric, much more like, who are we gonna, like, who's gonna cause this hero the problem this time around, you know? Like, you know, I think the biggest makes that error sometimes is Batman and Batman Returns, you know? Like, Batman is such a almost a minor character in that
right.
story, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I like that, for example, with Raimi's Spider-Man 2, it very clearly is Peter-centric and about his qualms with his responsibility of being Spider-Man and living a life where it's not completely shitty for him, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm hoping
he should
that
have some
with,
joy.
Yeah, I'm hoping with future Spider-Man movies, they let him really carry his own movie on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that last act has no other superheroes.
Yeah,
you know?
He has to be able to, like, fight that fight by himself.
Yeah.
And I think somebody said, and I don't know if this was before anybody had seen it,
mm-hmm.
so I think they were just guessing, but I think people are guessing that final shot where it's Spider-Man, or in the trailer, the first one, the it's Spider-Man and Iron Man, like, he's swinging and flying, flying together. Yeah. But that's like the final shot of the movie. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't mind that because then maybe Tony takes him seriously finally. Right.
It's like, all right, you're an Avenger.
Yeah. But
here's your card.
Peter needs to fight that fight by himself. And I'm kind of hoping, like, we've seen so much Iron Man and Tony in the
trailers. Hope
you've seen all of it. I'm basically assuming that we've seen a bit of every single scene that he's in.
And I wouldn't be surprised, like, if that's the case. Yeah. Like, because I think they're really going to want to push that in marketing.
Yeah.
But maybe that's all there really is in the film. Yeah. And that's fine.
The only thing that concerns me is that they have now said that there will be another MCU character in the second one. The second Spider-Man movie.
Second one. Okay.
Which Feige just confirmed.
Stan Lee.
It won't be Iron Man, but Feige just confirmed that the next Spider-Man is the first movie after Avengers 4.
So interesting.
It's only 2 years until we get our next Spider-Man.
Wow.
Movie.
Oh,
okay.
It'll be summer of 2019. All
right.
Yeah. Which I was like, wow,
that's
crazy.
Soon, yeah.
He also confirmed that Amy Pascal is insane and the Black Cat and Silver Sable and Venom movies are not in the MCU.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I mean, like, okay, there were multiple different reports kind of saying that it was or it wasn't. I feel like maybe...
Did you watch the clip where she says it?
Oh, with Amy Pascal particularly?
Yeah.
What does she say specifically?
She says it's adjacent, and Feige's sitting next
adjacent.
To her. Feige's sitting next to her, and you can see it on his face. He's like,
kind of going,
no, it's
what
not.
What are you
not
talking
really.
About? And it's become the new sad Batman meme.
Oh, no!
Like, it's confused Kevin Feige.
Right.
So, yeah, that's the new thing.
But
he was
like,
what are you talking about?
I feel like that's just probably the difference in semantics that we're going to hear from Sony and then from Marvel. Like, Sony is going to, like, yeah, they're going to say adjacent. What does that mean?
Yeah.
It could
right.
just mean, like...
Are they just going to pretend Spider-Man exists
movie?
And is around,
yeah.
but they're not going to show him?
I think they might be using that liberally. They could just be... You could just say the same thing about the X-Men movies.
Right.
They're adjacent because they're also Marvel movies that don't strictly contradict them. So it's like...
Right. Except for Quicksilver.
Right, yeah.
I think what
well,
Feige
I guess
said...
Well, they didn't have Scarlet Witch, but yeah.
Right.
Because Feige said for now, which is the same thing he says about any time he's
for
asked
now?
About, like, whether the X-Men will be part of the MCU. He's like, for now, there are no plans. So
yeah.
he said for now, Spider-Man is the only part of... He is in the MCU.
Yeah.
The rest of it is not.
Yeah.
So it's...
Which I'm kind of fine with, because, like, the mutants are kind of their own universe. Like, there's so many mutants.
Yeah.
So
can you imagine?
Many mutants.
Can you imagine Infinity War? We're going to have, like, 62 characters or something ludicrous, right?
No.
And if we had the mutants,
all
too?
Mutants.
Oh, my God.
And it's not just
isn't
the
like
X-Men,
one
but
mutant
it's like...
that's like, I represent the X-Men.
Exactly.
I have come here to,
right.
to fight
just
on their
Wolverine
behalf.
Just show up
right.
just because.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I guess they got Scarlet Witch. She's a mutant.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
But not in this universe.
Right,
maybe
not in this
she's
universe.
What's the term they use? Because I know they use...
They call her a miracle.
Yeah,
she's
right.
enhanced.
Enhanced. Enhanced is the MCU term.
Yeah.
Metahuman, I think, is a DC term.
Yes.
And then...
Mutant
X-Men
is
mutant.
Yeah, X-Men.
That's a universe, yeah.
And apparently they could have used the word mutant, but they agreed not to. Like, it's not actually written.
Right.
It's part of the contract, but they agreed not to just to not confuse
them. Yeah, I'm glad.
Because I remember that being,
sense.
Like,
that
a big
be
point of, like, that they could have used that term for Avengers, but they didn't. Yeah.
I was like, just don't. Let's leave it separate.
I mean, it's that weird gray area. I mean, the Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch themselves are, like, I think there was a lot of gray area with what they could do. Like, basically, like, because Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch are both X-Men characters and Avengers characters, which is why they could officially appear in both. But in Avengers, they couldn't mention Magneto. They couldn't mention their father, you know,
right?
Like, or that they were. Or I guess they could have mentioned that they were mutants, but you know, there's all these parts of the characters that you kind of have to tiptoe around. So I don't know. I mean, I remember for a while there was talk when the Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster lawsuit was going on with Warner Brothers. There was talk about, like, depending on how this lawsuit comes out, Warner Brothers might have to get rid of certain aspects of Superman's character, like flight, you know?
What?
Well,
oh, that would have been weird.
Yeah. I mean, because that,
like Smallville for 9.5 seasons.
Oh, God.
Smallville. For however long he can fly.
Yeah, how long they kept it. Which is, it's incredible to think of all the many people who've played Superman over the years, including, like, George Reeves, who played him over 3 seasons and on cinema. Tom Welling has played the character by far the longest running time.
Mm-hmm.
And
never wore
Superman.
The costume.
Right?
Never wore the costume, yeah.
So
technically,
sad.
He was Superman in a couple of shots. In the
game. That's
so
funny.
That's, it just blows my mind that they stretched that premise for 10 years.
Yeah.
It was good for part of it.
For good and for bad, yeah.
Yeah, I remember when I saw Bottom. Happy Smallville memories. Mm-hmm. In fact, I feel like I've told you this before, but I refused to watch Smallville at first because Lois wasn't in it. And I was like, I'm not going to have Lana taking Lois a story.
Right.
Yeah. And so then I started watching when Lois showed up.
Durance, yeah.
And then I only watched episodes with Lois in them.
I love Lois. Yeah, Erica Durance was great.
Yes, she was great. Yeah. She was great.
Maybe my favorite Lois Lane, because I think all the movie Lois.
I mean, it's the thing, it's like.
Margot Kidder.
I mean, I love Margot Kidder, and I love Terry Hatcher.
Terry Hatcher I loved. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess a combo of just like. Her the way that she was written, and then just like that she has like the right amount of spunk and like abrasiveness without it pushing you away, right?
And I mean, nothing against Kate Bosworth and Amy Adams.
Amy Adams is a great actress, but the writing for Lois is weak for
life. Yes, and I also think, like, for, at least in her case, terrible. I don't think she has, like, I hate to use the term chemistry, but, like, I don't see any her and Henry Cavill
is just like a really attractive. I don't blame that on Amy Adams at all.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't see the chemistry. Yeah. Kate Bosworth,
I think she's way too young.
Yeah. But. Yeah, too young.
How was I supposed to believe that she had won a Pulitzer? That she'd been working long enough to win a Pulitzer. Yeah. I was like, you're like four.
And she's got like this like 5-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, they had an actress that was too young playing a much more experienced character.
Yeah. And Singer was open about, like, he wanted to see this go on, you know, go on to into a big franchise, and that's why he kind of cast young. But I still think he cast too young.
Too young. And then too, like, I don't know. I just, whatever it was called, Superman Returns, I just remember thinking when I was watching, like, why don't they give Superman any lines? Like, why doesn't Brandon Roth get to speak? He's just kind of.
Poor Brandon.
Yeah.
Oh, I love him so much.
And then with Henry Cavill, it's like, I mean, with it, for once, can Superman smile?
Yeah.
He's not supposed to be so dour. That's Batman's job.
But hopefully that era of that story is done with.
Right. Reborn in and be much happier.
Yeah, hopefully.
He'll be like.
Hopefully he'll actually crack a joke. And I mean,
Joss Whedon will write him some jokes for all this reshoots of.
Oh, that's right. I totally forgot that I was like, what? In Batgirl? Anyway, I remember now. It's all coming back to me.
But especially, like, knowing that, you know, they, like, especially with the reception for Wonder Woman, I think they realized that, you know, fans don't want to see dark and dour.
Right.
You know, and I'm sure that's a lot of what Whedon will bring to it in the reshoots, too. Yeah.
And on that note, we're going to end.
Yay!
So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us on your iPhones or wherever you're listening.
Yeah.
Android phones.
Screw you, Apple.
Sure. All right, we'll see you next week.
Thank you for having me on the podcast. Yeah.
Thank you for joining us, Brian. Yeah, sure. See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for the third Pop a la Carte. As always, keep up with us on withanaccent.com for news, reviews, interviews, and more. And you can follow our social media pages at withanaccent. On Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram. Or you can follow the podcast at Pop A La Carte Pod on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.